Now the middle of page 6. We have already seen in Apologetics 11 and 14 there is no imminence. The little nation Israel already numbers more than came out of Egypt. Just think of it. There's more than ever came out of Egypt. Speaks Hebrew. Buys with shekels. Has scripture on more than 150 postage stamps. And already has proven to be the strongest military power in the Middle East. John R. Rice believed Jesus, who was who Jesus said he was, but John R. Rice taught he may come at any moment, and it says don't follow these people. Before digressing further, let us add some more of the scripture. Matthew 24:20. But you be praying in order that your, now we see this rectangular box come around again, the pronouns are back, flight might not come to pass over winter, neither in Sabbath. Mark 13:18. But you be praying in order that your flight might not come to pass over winter. This flight is in connection with the desolation of Jerusalem. It indicates a short period of flight if it did not include a Sabbath. You see, if it didn't overlap a Sabbath, then it's a very short flight. Matthew 24:21. For then will be great tribulation, such as has not come to pass from the beginning of the world until the now, that is up to when Jesus was speaking, nor by no means might come to pass. Mark 13:19. For those days will be tribulation, such as has not come to pass, such as this, from beginning of creation, which the God created, until the now, up to where the Lord is, and by no means might come to pass. Matthew 24:22, and unless those days were cut short, all flesh was not saved. That is, all Israel's flesh. That's what he's talking about. But because of the chosen, those days will be cut short. Mark 13:20, and unless Jehovah cut short the days, all flesh was not saved. But what? But because of the chosen whom he chose himself, he cut short the days. So that was already determined when Jesus told them this. I have called this a 2,000-year complex history, for Jesus spoke the words about 1,950 years ago. I have brought you this far to show you the close parallel between all three records. They all began the same way, with the promise that the great stones of the temple would be thrown down. They all end with the parable of the fig tree. Excuse me. I believe the three records make an enigma, and I explained that to you, which covers about 2,000 years. I further believe that making one record, the first desolation of Jerusalem in AD 70, and another record, a future desolation, distorts the total scripture. Let us concentrate our attention for a moment on the flight. The flight from Jerusalem described in this prophecy has been literally fulfilled. Secondly, it's a flight on foot, not a modern type of flight. Those on the housetop ran from roof to roof. See, they didn't come down. They just ran along on the roofs. Well, you can't do that so much anymore. Some descended by outside stairs. They don't have as many anymore. The ones in the field fled at once. All three records warn of difficulty for pregnant and nursing women. Matthew 24:20 and Mark 13:18 warn against a winter flight, and Matthew 14:20 against a flight on Sabbath. All three records tell them to flee into the mountains. Put this flight in the light of a flight from armored tank columns and nuclear weapons, and it makes little of any sense, because you can't very well flee from an armored tank column. There's just no way you would get anywhere, because the armored tank columns would just cover the mountains into which you're trying to flee. They'll be everywhere. But this kind of a thing, to flee from other foot soldiers, even horsemen, was a relatively easy thing. You could flee out, hide in the caves, look at the caves that have been located out in the mountains there, in which they found Dead Sea Scrolls. So you could get away. You could hide. Notice how for 3 years they held out in Masada. So there were things you could do. Can you imagine trying to hold out on Masada with modern weapons, with an airplane over your head, dropping nuclear weapons? Well, you wouldn't hold out 15 seconds. So this is a foot flight. Page 8. The most amazing thing is that God gave us other scriptures that fit into this picture and then preserved for us a record by an eyewitness to the whole period. That witness was Josephus. And I believe that Josephus has been divinely given to us because he became a devout Christian and he gave us this authentic history. He was there. All right? Luke 19:41. And when he was come near, he beheld the city. This is another passage out of Scripture. And wept over it, saying, If thou hadst known, even thou, at least in this thy day, the things which belong unto thy peace, but now they are hid from thine eye. For the day shall come upon thee, that thine enemies shall cast a trench about thee, and compass thee round about, and keep thee in on every side. You're going to see that in just a minute. And shall lay thee even with the ground, and thy children within thee, and they shall not leave in thee one stone upon another, because thou knewest not the time of thy visitation. Now here's the whole statement regarding the city of Jerusalem, you see, particularly. All right, let's go to the Josephus's record in the wars of the Jews. And he's got a heading there. Let's look at that heading. Titus thought fit to encompass the city round with a wall, after which the famine consumed the people by whole houses and families together. Now, we come now to the actual writings of Josephus. That therefore, his opinion was that if they aimed, that's just, he's talking now about Titus, at quickness joined with security, they must build a wall round about the whole city, which was, he thought, the only way to prevent the Jews from coming out anyway. And that when they would either entirely despair of saving the city, and so would surrender it up to him, or be still and more easily conquered when the famine had further weakened them. Now at this wall without were erected 13 places to keep garrisons in, the circumference of which put together amounted to 10 furlongs. The whole was completed in 3 days. And this was so remarkable that they completed this wall all the way around the city in 3 days, so that what would naturally have required some months was done in so short an interval as is incredible. When Titus had therefore encompassed the city with this wall and put garrisons into proper places, he went round the wall at the first watch of the night and observed how the guard was kept. All right, look at that Luke 19 right next to you. Thine enemy shall cast a trench about thee, compass thee round, and keep thee in on every side. How about that? Right there in your history. Now look at Luke 23. And there followed him a great company of people and of women, who also bewailed and lamented him. But Jesus, turning unto them, said, Daughters of Jerusalem, weep not for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming, in the which they shall say, Blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bear, and the paps which never gave suck. Then shall they begin to say to the mountains, Fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. All right, now, let's go further. I've got it in the margin, and I've marked it so you could see the importance of the personal pronoun. Further, you be weeping over yourselves and over your children. That is, the people to whom he was speaking, right there and then. They were going to be in this flight, and many of them. Not all of them, but many of them, especially over your children. See, the children are going to be in the flight, almost certainly, most of them that would live, not be killed somehow. Now watch what the history says. So all hope of escaping was now cut off from the Jews, together with their liberty of going out of the city. Then did the famine widen its progress and devoured the people by whole houses and families. The upper rooms were full of women and children that were dying by famine, and the lanes of the city were full of the dead bodies of the aged. The children also and the young men wandered about the marketplaces like shadows, all swelled with the famine, and fell down dead wheresoever their misery seized them. So you can see what it would mean to have little babies at that time and see them die in front of you, and you couldn't do anything about it. At this point, it was too late for flight. Luke 21:20 gave the warning as to when to flee. Look at some more history. As for the Jews, when they saw the war approaching to their metropolis, they left the feast and betook themselves to their arms, and taking courage greatly from their multitude, went in a sudden and disorderly manner to the fight with a great noise, without any consideration of the rest of the seventh day, although the Sabbath was the day to which they had the greatest regard. So they were going to battle when they saw the war approaching their metropolis. In other words, they saw the camps coming and surrounding them on every hand. Now, Matthew and Mark, page 2, mention the abomination of the desolation, which most historians in the past have applied to the idolatrous Roman armies indicated by their Roman standards. Now, I put a sample of standards here. You see the eagle, and Rome was represented by the eagle. That was their principal standard, and the idol, and you see these kind of things. Now, you'll see more of this in a little while. Page 9. Cestius Gallus, the Roman governor of Syria, came against Jerusalem A.D. 66. That's 4 years ahead of its collapse. His victory was almost certain. There were really three groups in the city. The seditious, and that's made up of subgroups. They were fighting each other. The poor people that were just caught in this melee, and the Hebrew Christians that were in there, too. Now, look carefully at how the situation goes. Now, it was that a horrible fear seized upon the seditious, these that are fighting each other, when they saw Cestius Gallus coming, insomuch that many of them ran out of the city as though it were to be taken immediately. But the people upon this, you see, they made a flight right away, even those. But the people upon this took courage, and where the wicked part of the city gave ground, thither did they come in order to set open the gates and to admit Cestius as their benefactor, who, had he but continued the siege a little longer, had certainly taken the city. But it was, I suppose, owing to the aversion God had already at the city and the sanctuary, that he was hindered from putting an end to the war that very day. Now, you see, what I've given you on page 8 is up at the climax under Titus. That's under Titus. That comes in A.D. 70. And maybe this isn't too clear for you, so I want to clear it out. On page 9, I'm giving you Cestius Gallus' attack on the city in A.D. 66, 4 years earlier. And I'm trying to show you when this flight took place, and I'm trying to show you that they took advantage of it, and they saw the Roman army surrounding them, and how it got too late. Now, the next section, 7. It then happened that Cestius was not conscious either how the besieged despaired of success, nor how courageous the people were for him. And so he recalled his soldiers from the place, and by despairing of any expectation of taking it, without having received any disgrace, he retired from the city without any reason in the world. Now, isn't that amazing, the way Josephus writes? Without any reason in the world, he just retired. He left the city. And with a bad loss of his troops, too, by the way. Now, note this. I have included the footnote by William Winston. He is the professor, or was, the professor of mathematics at Cambridge, who translated Josephus in 1736, a long time ago, before America was here. All right, look at his footnote. There may another very important and very providential reason be here assigned for this strange and foolish retreat of Cestius, which if Josephus had been now a Christian, see, he wasn't yet, he might probably have taken notice of also, and that is the affording the Jewish Christians in the city an opportunity of calling to mind the prediction and caution given them by Christ about 33 years and a half before, that, quote, when they should see the abomination of desolation, that is, the idolatrous Roman army, with the images of their idols and their ensigns, ready to lay Jerusalem desolate, quote, stand where it ought not, or in the holy place, or when they should see Jerusalem compassed with armies, they should then flee to the mountain. Now notice what he's got inserted in there, the abomination of desolation. So back in 1736, this is what they generally all believed. They didn't make all of this separation that came to pass with that 1830 innovation, you see. They had no trouble with this at all. By complying which, those Jewish Christians fled to the mountains of Perea and escaped this destruction. Nor was there perhaps any one instance of a more unpolitic but more providential conduct than this retreat of Cestius, visible during the whole siege of Jerusalem, which yet was providentially such a great tribulation as not been from the beginning of the world to that time, nor there ever should be. Now, that isn't quite right, because it was shortened according to scriptures I've shown you, but that gives you a pretty good picture of the situation. Now, he's continuing with the words of Josephus. This defeat happened on the 8th day of the month Dios, in the 12th year of the reign of Nero. Now, going over to your margin before I get too far, Cestius was defeated in what we would be our October, and the flight of Christians took place. Since some time now elapsed before the Romans returned, there was no reason for the flight to be on a Sabbath. Now, in addition to this, and I should put this in, even when the Romans came the second time, there was a further respite during which Vespasian returned to Rome, that they again had a little opportunity of getting out. But the history gets so involved here, I didn't know what to put in for you and what to leave out. So I took some of the highlights so you could see how the prophecies are fulfilled and how they're understood to be fulfilled. So coming to my notes again, I believe that this tribulation was the most intense up to that time. But since the flight was not in winter or on a Sabbath, it was not what it would have been. Now coming back to Josephus chapter 20. After this calamity had befallen Cestius, many of the most eminent of the Jews swam away from the city as from a ship when it was going to sink. So there you are. He knows they fled out at that time. Now, look a little further. Here is the dissertation on the prophecy. Come to your margin first. The summary of Dr. Thomas Newton in Volume 2, beginning on page 59, is long, but worth including. This was written in 1824. You see, I'm getting you things that came before this 1830 thing started up. The people were to flee from the Judea as well as Jerusalem. The first figure, those who perished in Jerusalem, is 1,100,000. The days were cut short. It would have been worse, because God said they were cut short. Now look how this historian records this, and Sir Thomas Newton was a devout Christian, and he dealt with prophecies. This was his field. One of his fields, anyway. To St. Matthew's account, St. Luke addeth, "And they shall fall by the edge of the sword, shall be led captive into all nations, and Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled." Now watch how he handled it, and he handled this back in 1824. My goodness sakes alive, can't you see over 160 years ago, and he knew what it meant. The number of those who fell by the edge of the sword was indeed very great. Of those who perished during the whole siege, there were, as Josephus saith, 1,100,000. That's that 1,100,000. Many were also slain at other times and in other places. By the command of Florus, who was the first author of the war, there were slain at Jerusalem 3,600. Now, I won't read all of the details for you. Just look at the numbers, and I've got them marked. 20,000, 13,000, 2,500, 2,000, 50,000, 8,400, 2,000, 10,000, 10,000, 8,000, 15,000, 11,600. Come over to the top of page 10. 40,000. 4,200, 6,500, 1,200, 4,000 slain, beside 5,000 who threw themselves down a precipice. Of those who fled with John from Gischala, 6,000. Of the Gadarenes, 15,000 slain, besides an infinite number drowned. In the villages of Idumea, above 10,000 slain. At Gerasa, 1,000. At another place, 1,700. In the war wood of Jardis, 3,000. In the castle of Masada, 960. You know about that. In Cyrene, by Catullus the governor, 3,000. Besides these, many of every age, sex, and condition were slain in this war who are not reckoned. But of these who are reckoned, the number amounts to above 1,357,660. Now, Compare that even to the Holocaust. These were slaughtered in a very short time, for the most part, very short time, which would appear almost incredible if their own historian had not so particularly enumerated them. But besides the Jews who fell by the edge of the sword, others were also to be led away captive into all nations. See, that's your Luke passage again. And considering the numbers of the slain, the number of captives, too, was very great. There was particularly at Jaffa, 2,130. At Jotapa, 1,200. Another place, 6,000 chosen young men were sent to Nero. The rest sold to the number of 30,400. And then you've got 2,200. In Idumea, above 1,000. Many besides these were taken at Jerusalem, so that as Josephus himself informs us, the number of the captives taken in the whole war amounted to 97,000. The tall and handsome young men Titus reserved for his triumph. Of the rest, those above 17 years of age were sent to the works in Egypt, but most were distributed through the Roman provinces to be destroyed in their theaters by the sword, by the wild beasts. Those under 17 were sold for slaves. Of these captives, many underwent hard fate. 11,000 of them perished for want. Titus exhibited all sorts of shows and spectacles at Caesarea, and many of the captives were there destroyed, some being exposed to the wild beasts and others compelled to fight in troops against one another. At Caesarea, too, in honor of his brother's birthday, 2,500 Jews were slain, and a great number likewise at Berytus in honor of his father. The like was done in other cities of Syria. Those whom he reserved for his triumph were Simon and John, the generals of the captives, and 700 others of remarkable stature and beauty. Thus were the Jews miserably tormented and distributed over the Roman provinces. Now what? And are they not distressed and dispersed over all the nations of the earth? He wrote that. Go back to your date on it. He wrote that in 1824, and he knew they were still in diaspora. He didn't have any trouble with this prophecy. And if you attach it to the right scriptures, you wouldn't have any trouble either. Look at Deuteronomy 28. Because thou servest not the Lord thy God with joyfulness and with gladness of heart for the abundance of all things, therefore shalt thou serve thine enemies, which the Lord shall send against thee, in hunger and thirst and nakedness and want of all things. You just read it. They were in want. And he shall put a yoke of iron upon thy neck until he have destroyed thee. The Lord shall bring a nation against thee from far, from the end of the earth, as swift as the eagle. There's your emblem again of the eagle flying. A nation whose tongue thou shalt not understand. A nation of fierce countenance, which shall not regard the person of the old, nor show favor to the young. He shall eat the fruit of thy cattle, the fruit of thy land, until thou be destroyed, which also shall not leave thee either corn, wine, or oil, or the increase of thy kine, or flocks of thy sheep, until he have destroyed thee. He shall besiege thee in all thy gates. A lot of the cities, you see them all mentioned there in Thomas Newton's work. Until there, Josephus, he got that out of Josephus. You can read the details, but it was faster to do it this way, because he put the summary together. Until thy high and fenced walls come down, wherein thou trustest, throughout all thy land. See, till all the walls are down, and they were. And he shall besiege thee in all thy gates throughout all thy land which the Lord thy God hath given thee. Thou shalt eat the fruit of thine own body, the flesh of thy sons and thy daughters, which the Lord thy God hath given thee. In the siege and the straitness wherewith thine enemies shall distress thee, they're going to eat their own children. You're going to see that in just a minute. So that the man that is tender among you and very delicate, his eye shall be evil toward his brother and toward the wife of his bosom, toward the remnant of his children, which he shall eat, so that he will not give to any of them of the flesh of his children whom he shall eat, because he hath nothing left him in the siege and in the straitness wherewith thine enemy shall distress thee in all thy gates. The tender and delicate woman among you which would not adventure to set the sole of her foot upon the ground for delicateness and tenderness, her eye shall be evil toward the husband of her bosom, and toward her son, and toward her daughter, and toward her young one that cometh out from between her feet, and toward her children which she shall bear, for she shall eat them for want of all things secretly in the siege and straitness wherewith thine enemy shall distress thee in thy gate. Now all you need is some proof, isn't it? All right? Let's go to the top of page 11. There was a certain woman that dwelt beyond Jordan. Her name was Mary. Her father was Eliezer of the village Bethzeb, which signifies the house of Hyssop. She was eminent for her family and her wealth, and had fled away to Jerusalem with the rest of the multitude, and was with them besieged therein at this time. The other effects of this woman had been already seized upon, which I mean as she had brought with her out of Perea, and removed to the city, what she had treasured up beside, as also what food she had contrived to save, had been also carried off by the rapacious guards, who came every day running into her house for that purpose. This put the poor woman into a very great passion, and by the frequent reproaches and imprecations she cast at these rapacious villains, she had provoked them to anger against her. But none of them, either out of the indignation she had raised against herself or out of the commiseration of her case, would take away her life. See, she wanted them to kill her, and they wouldn't even do that. And if she found any food, she perceived her labors were for others and not for herself. And it was now become impossible for her anyway to find any more food, while the famine pierced through her very bowels and marrow, when also her passion was fired to a degree beyond the famine itself. Nor did she consult with anything but with her passion and the necessity she was in. She then attempted a most unnatural thing, and snatching up her son, who was a child sucking at her breast, she said, O thou miserable infant, for whom shall I preserve thee in this war, this famine, and this sedition? As to the war with the Romans, if they preserve our lives, we must be slaves. This famine also will destroy us, even before that slavery comes upon us. Yet are these seditious rogues more terrible than both the other? Come on, be thou my food, and be thou a fury to these seditious varlets, and by a byword to the world, which is all that is now wanting to complete the calamities of us Jews. As soon as she had said this, she slew her son, and then roasted him, and ate the one half of him, and kept the other half by her concealed. Upon this the seditious came in presently, and smelling the horrible scent of this food, they threatened her, that they would cut her throat immediately if she did not show them what food she had gotten ready. She replied that she had saved a very fine portion of it for them, and withal uncovered what was left of her son. Hereupon they were seized with a horror and amazement of mind, and stood astonished at the sight. When she said to them, This is mine own son, and what hath been done was mine own doing. Come, eat of this food, for I have eaten of it myself. Do not you pretend to be either more tender than a woman, or more compassionate than a mother? But if you be so scrupulous, and do abominate this my sacrifice, as I have eaten the one half, let the rest be reserved for me also. After which these men went out trembling, being never so much affrighted at anything as they were at this, and with some difficulty they left the rest of that meat to the mother. Now he gives that exact account to show you what was happening, and Scripture in Deuteronomy 28 said that they would do this in more general times than just one, and Josephus records it. Now Israel's dispersion in the Old Testament prophecy, here it is, Deuteronomy 28:63, and it shall come to pass that as the Lord rejoiced over you to do you good and to multiply you, so the Lord will rejoice over you to destroy you and to bring you to naught. You shall be plucked from off the land whither thou goest to possess it, and the Lord shall scatter thee among all people, from the one end of the earth even unto the other. There's your diaspora. And there shalt thou serve other gods, which neither thou nor thy fathers have known, even wood and stone. And among these nations shalt thou find no ease, neither shall the sole of thy foot have rest. But the Lord shall give thee there a trembling heart, and a failing of eyes, and sorrow of mind. And thy life shall hang in doubt before thee, and thou shalt fear day and night, and shall have none assurance of thy life. Remember, they're going to be being hated. Here it is. In the morning thou shalt say, Would God it were even. And at even thou shalt say, Would God it were morning. For the fear of thine heart, wherewith thou shalt fear, and for the sight of thine eyes, which thou shalt see. Many more events are recorded by Josephus, which you should read, but I cannot give more space here now. So we continue with Jesus' prophecy and the warning against false messiahs and false prophets. And we'll begin there our next lesson. Thank you.